We are right now looking at performance. Now our second test is scheduled for this coming Tuesday. However, I want to shift that to Thursday so that we will have so we have the quiz available for you today, and so the quiz I think we will set it to Monday. I think it's already set. It's set for Monday midnight, almost before, just before midnight, and. So let's have the test on Thursday instead of Tuesday. So that will give us some time to, I guess, reflect on things and see if we have any questions and so on. And for test two, let us include everything, including arithmetic, but we will include the performance. Let's see. What have we done so far about performance? Okay, performance. So we have today and Tuesday. And on Tuesday, we want to do some review, but we will continue with performance a little bit. So let us include whatever we finish by end of today. But whatever we will do on Tuesday, we will not include that, unless, of course, it is a review, in which case. It is intended to be included. So we are looking at performance. And the test two, the next quiz will be available to you this afternoon. So the next one. And you have a few days to work on it. And the quiz covers some of the discussions on the instruction set, programming. It also includes everything that we have included in arithmetic, including so signed and unsigned numbers, building of the ALU. Remember, some of the material we took from the appendix, which is appendix B. And we had carry look ahead, thanks. And we have a multiplication. When we talked about floating point operations, floating point addition, we talked about floating point multiply, and we talked about rounding. So all those things would be included in the quiz. You have to. I guess this is this quiz is actually more like a homework. In other words, expect to spend some time on the questions. So you have to think about the questions. Maybe you have a pencil and paper ready and do some calculations if necessary and so on. So we are talking about performance, and we are talking about the. How to evaluate performance. So I had mentioned that basically performance is inverse of execution time. So if you have a computer which takes longer to compute a set of programs, then you will say that that computer is slower or its performance is less. And that's basically how we compare performance. And then there's a question of how do we evaluate performance. And I had mentioned about benchmark programs, and people have used different benchmarks. So basically the idea is that you have a set of standard programs, and you use the same programs for different machines and see how long it takes for those machines. And I have mentioned that we have one of the well-known set of benchmarks are the SPEC suite of programs. And then you have some programs that focus on integer and others that include substantial amount of floating point operations. So for each SPEC measure, you will have two numbers. And you can look at these two numbers to see how they compare. And then I had also mentioned about your reference machine. So basically, SPEC 200 numbers are with respect to a Sun Ultra 510, a 300 megahertz processor. So basically this number, if you will get this number for any PC, it will tell you how fast it is compared with that specific Sun machine. And I was mentioning that basically we are going to focus on performance of the CPU, and we are not going to talk about operating system involvement, although that also would have been valid, but that's a separate consideration. Now there are other things that will impact performance. So for example, if you have a small amount of main memory, your programs will take longer, and that's because you have the operating system intervention. The operating system needs to fetch things from the secondary storage, put them in the main memory, and so on. But we are not considering operating systems. So basically, our focus is on CPU, basically. Now, I was mentioning about two things. Okay, as I mentioned, we will have the test now on Thursday instead of on Tuesday. So you have the single instruction execution time. Versus throughput. Or instead of single instruction execution time, you can also talk about some single set of operations. Basically, it would be the same idea. Now, it is possible that in a new system, the single instruction execution time maybe about the same, or maybe a little larger, maybe a little more, but throughput could be higher. So basically, these are two different things. So if you consider this, so let's assume that there's some combinational function that needs to be done. And let us say that we have some basic information coming in from this side. And for convenience, let's assume that the whole thing is combinational, although it could be a combination of combinational sequential things. And the information comes out here. Now compare this. Now I have an alternative design. I take this design and I slice it, perhaps into three slices. So here, and I insert some pipeline registers. So these are pipeline registers, which are triggered by the same clock. So this is a pipeline register, this is a pipeline register. And the whole logic, I have divided into three pieces.
Now, which one do you think would be faster?
So this, these three blocks together, they contain exactly the same logic as this, except what I have done is I've divided it and inserted a register here, inserted a register here. So which would work faster? How many of you say that this would be faster? Okay, how many of you say this would be slower? Why do you think this would be slower?
It seems like you'd have to take the time to write to the registry.
That is true.
Yeah.
So, basically, if this is combinational, you have to allow for some time for signals to come from here to here and make sure they are stable, and then you can latch them into the registers. Now, if you assume that the time it takes for information within the register is relatively small, in that case you can say that the total amount of time from here to here, let us say that the maximum propagation delay from here to here is uppercase T, then, and if these are approximately same, then the total amount of time it will take would be approximately T by 3. If we assume that the slices are at the same delay, but then you have some overhead that we have inserted, right? So, total delay for a single operation, now this operation could be an instruction, or it could be a separate operation, in this case would be equal to 3 times T by 3 plus some overhead, right? So that means about 3 plus some overhead, which means it is somewhat slower, right? However, now let's look at it from another point of view. Generally, your clock period has to be sufficiently long so that all the signals that start here have arrived here and have stabilized, right? So you have to allow for the longest combinational path. So in this case, your clock period, oh, we have some better markers here. Let's try this. So your clock period would be approximately uppercase T. Actually, it has to be a little longer, and you have to allow for some overhead, but let's approximate. And your clock frequency . Okay, what is the relationship between clock period and clock frequency? Inverse, right? Now, what about for this design? Assuming, now I have kind of approximated this a little bit. We can do a more accurate calculation, but I think approximation would be enough for us to see what we will achieve. What about the clock period here? How long should the clock be so that when signals go from here to here, or when they go from here to here, or when they go from here to here, signals have stabilized before the next clock pulse arrives?
T by 3,
right? And hence the clock frequency. Is equal to 3 divided by T. In other words, clock frequency can be 3 times But of course, that doesn't make the whole thing faster, because it's for a single operation, you have to go through three of these. So basically, you just have some overhead.
However, what about the throughput? Now let's call this design A, and let's call this design B. Now B is the pipeline with design.
So in design B,
okay, let's look at throughput. So in the total delay for a single operation. Now this is for design B. Okay, now throughput for design B.
How many instructions does it execute in a given time?
So this is the clock frequency.
So
So here, from here to here, we have one operation.
Then how many operations do we do per unit time?
So, throughput, so we have three operations in time t.
Can you say that? Plus every third of t, a new operation would be done, assuming that the pipeline is full. So things are just flowing through the pipeline, right?
So throughput for design B, and this would be, if you would compare, with one operation in time T for design A.
So basically we are saying that design B has, even though for a single operation it takes longer, its throughput is much higher, because every third of uppercase T, a new operation gets done. So, and usually it is the throughput that we are interested in. So whenever we talk about number of clock frequencies per instruction, it is usually in terms of throughput. Now, before we go forward, let me mention a little bit about averaging. Okay, do you know how to take average? Now, we have said that for, you have the benchmarks, right? And if you want to calculate a number, so for example, if you want to take your, what did we call that number? spec C in 2000, for example. So we have a suite of programs. So that basically we take average of the ratios. So we have a number of programs. So for, we run a program and see how long it takes compared with the reference machine, which is an old Sun machine. And let us say related to one, it is for one program it is 1,000 times faster, for another program it is 500 times faster, for another program it is 275 times faster, and so on. So how do we take the average?
So how do we get this average?
Now, do you know how to take average? Let's talk a little bit about how to take average. You know, there are more than one ways of calculating average. Now, what you are usually familiar with is you have an arithmetic mean. And which is basically simple. So if you want to take arithmetic average, mean is same thing as average. Is that true? I guess you all have taken some statistics, right? So of course, so you have the mean, and you know about median and mode and so on. But mean, basically, the term average is just a popular term for mean. And usually, when we say mean, usually we mean this arithmetic mean. And that is, if you have n ratios, then basically we take average of the n ratios. That's a usual way. Now, people have argued that for evaluating performance, this is not the best way of taking an average. But they say that the better way of taking an average is to take the geometric mean. And this is what they have been doing. Now, geometric mean is basically this. You multiply all the ratios. So for each benchmark, each program of the benchmark, you calculate the ratio. And then you multiply them all together. You multiply them all together and take the power 1 by n. That is geometric mean. Now, statisticians, they have studied the properties of arithmetic mean and geometric mean. And they say that for a situation like this, it is better to take the geometric mean rather than the arithmetic mean. So for example, let me give you a couple of examples. Now let me, let us assume that we are doing arithmetic mean and we have three ratios. So the ratios are 1, 4, and 16. And you have to take the arithmetic mean. So the arithmetic mean is 1 plus 4 plus 16, and you divide by 3. And that comes out to be, let's see, 16 plus 5, that is
7.
So that should come out to be 7. Okay, now let's consider the geometric mean. So the geometric mean is 1 multiplied by 4 multiplied by 16, and then take the power of 1 by 3. Okay, how much is that? So that is equal to 4. Because that is 16 multiplied by 4, that is 64, and 64 is 2 raised to 8, right? So 2 raised to 2 is the cube root. But anyway, you can just take out your calculator and calculate that. So the geometric mean is 4. So The general practice is that they prefer to take the geometric mean. Now, geometric mean has some nice properties. In geometric mean, you have to listen to this carefully. Mean of the ratios is the ratio of the mean. So that is a good property. So which is an interesting statement, but if you think about it, so this will work for a geometric mean, but it's not true for arithmetic mean. Any questions or comments?
Is there a reason why the geometric mean is better?
This is one of the reasons that they say that this is a good property, and statisticians think that this is an important property of this measure. So for something like this, they prefer the geometric mean.
So that's any time that you're dealing with the number of ratios?
Right, yeah. For whenever you're taking ratios like this, then geometric mean may be a better number. Of course, in many cases, you have to go by, there are many indexes that have been formulated for comparison purposes. And basically, whenever you take an index, you have no choice but to calculate the index the way it has been defined. So once somebody has defined the index, which is supposed to be calculated in a certain way, then that's how you would calculate the index for a comparison. So it's somewhat like the indexes for the stock market. So you have a number of indexes for the stock market, and depending on who you talk to, or depending on what source of news you look at, some people say that this particular index is a better measure of the stock market. And some people say that some other measure may be a better measure. So, okay, how many of you heard about the Dow Jones Industrial Average as the measure? So, do you think that's the best measure of the market?
No, I don't think so. It's mostly just really the big companies. I think the S&P 500 is probably a better one because it's 500 biggest companies. And so, it's not as biased with certain things.
Yeah,
certain companies biased the Dow Jones.
Yeah, that is true. So S&P 500, they say that, you know, that in Fort Collins, there's a place where they display the Dow Jones average. I guess you drive by it, and they have a big display, and you can see whether the market is up or down. But it may not always work for your portfolio, because your portfolio is probably more correlated with S&P 500. So so basically, I guess people have defined the indexes or measures, and these are the measures used for comparison, but I guess all measures have some limitations. Even S&P 500, even that is actually an index of, I guess, larger companies, not smaller companies. So there are some measures that are supposed to be even better than S&P 500 from that point of view. Anyway, so let's come back to performance. Okay, now let's look at what are the factors that affect the performance, and here we are basically talking about the CPU time. So coming back to CPU time, the
So we are talking about execution time. For a program. Okay, what are the things that control the time it takes for a program to execute? And we can say that the execution time, we could call it CPU time, equal to the number of clock cycles needed to execute the program, multiply it by clock period, right? And now for convenience, let me call clock period CT. Okay, number of clock cycles needed, how is that related to the number of instructions? So more instructions you have, more clock cycles you would need, right? And so that is equal to the number of instructions multiplied by, when we say number of instructions, we don't mean you count the number of instructions in your machine language program, but rather count how many instructions need to be executed. So if you have a loop which executes 10 times, then everything in it would be counted 10 times, right? So dynamically counted number of instructions multiplied by average, multiplied by average number of clock cycles per instruction. Now this number, average number of clock cycles per instruction, is extremely important in performance. And so we will give this a name, and we are going to call it CPI, number of cycles per instruction, multiplied by CT, which is the clock period. So this will, these three things multiplied together will tell you how long it will take. Now notice that different instructions will take different amount of time. So some instructions like multiplication or division, they are likely to take longer. Some instructions like moving information from one register to another will perhaps take less time, perhaps just a single clock period. And let's look at an example. Let us assume that we have a program. Any questions so far? Now here is a simple program. Now let us assume that we have a program and all the instructions are sequentially executed. Unfortunately, for today's processors, this is not true. Because there's a great degree of parallelism. But to see what is going on, let's start with something simple. So let's go back, let's say, a couple of decades, when things were simple. And we could have simple examples like this. Here is some program, and let's not worry about what this program does.
let's simply count the number of cycles. So let us say load takes 2 clock cycles, and followed by this we have another load, and let us say it takes 2 cycles, and we have an add, and let's assume that an add takes 1 cycle. And let's assume that store word takes a... Now that's for a particular implementation, 1 cycle. So we add up all the cycles for this program segment. So you want to see how long it will take. And that is, so we have 6 cycles. And we have 4 instructions, right? Now if things are as we have described here, then we can calculate our CPI, number of, average number of clock cycles per instruction, will come out to be, now notice that some instructions take longer, some take less, but on average, it takes 6 by 4. But did I say on average? I take that back. What I wanted to say was, for this particular example, CPI happens to be 6 divided by 4. Now you can have a different program with different mix of instructions, and it is possible that depending on the mix of instructions you have, CPI may come out to be different. But for this particular example, CPI happens to be 6 divided by 4, which is 1.5. And let us assume that the clock period, okay, what should we assume for a clock period? A reasonable number?
1 nanosecond
is simple enough. And for a 1 gigahertz processor, CT is 1 nanosecond. So the CPU time for this machine would be, okay, we have 6 clock cycles. And of course, we know that 6 is equal to 4 multiplied by 1.5. We could write it this way also. But anyway, 6 clock cycles, and each clock cycle is 1 nanosecond. So the answer is that this program segment will take 6 nanoseconds CPU execution time. Any questions or comments?
Are these cycle numbers on the green sheet?
Are the cycles number? I don't think so. And that's perhaps a reason. Do you think this is a number that would remain same for different MIPS implementation? Well, let's think about this. In fact, that's a good question. Now let us assume that we want to optimize our execution time. So what are the things that you can tweak? What are the things you can do? Get a better compiler? Compiler affects performance, right? If you have a better compiler, it might do a good job, and it will generate a code with fewer instructions, right? If you have an optimizing compiler. In fact, you may have heard about this. Sometimes people write most of their program, perhaps in a higher level language, and then they will take some critical part of the code. Sometimes there are some part of the code that you need to run very fast. And in that case, what people do is that they write that part of the code by hand. So they will write it in assembly language and they will optimize it by hand, rather than let it run through the compiler. So sometimes you want to do some very specific optimization, and then instead of doing it through the compiler, you may do it by hand. So it depends on how smart your compiler is. So you can do something with the compiler. Now, compiler will compile information for a given instruction set architecture, right? Now, how many of you have an AMD CPU? Okay, how many of you have Intel inside? Okay, so we see there are some AMD folks here. So, do they have the same instruction set architecture? Well, you're thinking about the architecture as a whole.
Yes.
But instruction set architecture is the same. In other words, once you have a compiled code, and it should run on all PCs. So, will not run on the Macs, but that's a different thing. Because Mac has different instruction set. I guess I have to take that back, don't I? Depending on which Mac we are talking about, right? Because some of the newer Macs, they use this so-called x86 architecture. So, you can have different processors, different separately designed processors with exactly the same instruction set architecture. Now, under the instruction set, what is instruction set architecture? So, that the green card that we have seen, the green card basically defines the instruction set architecture. It says that what are the instructions, instruction format, and what the instruction does, set of registers that are available. So all this is part of the instruction set architecture. Now, under the instruction set architecture, you have the microarchitecture. So for MIPS, we have seen the instruction set architecture. We are done with this. And shortly we are going to start looking at microarchitecture. We haven't done that yet. So microarchitecture, we have things at the register level. We have the ALU, this register, that register, connected together, information flowing, doing things. And all of that is microarchitecture. And of course, then there are things under microarchitecture, including, let's say, technology. Okay, so now there are different things you can do to make a program run faster, and things that are available. And let me add one more thing here. Okay, one thing that you should consider is algorithm. A few of you have a special interest in algorithms, and you know that for a given problem, often there is an efficient algorithm. So for example, you have different sort algorithms. So you can have an algorithm, and if you will use a different algorithm, let's have some space here. You want to write something. So if you use a different algorithm, what will you change? So let's make a list of things affected. You can change the instruction count. perhaps you can have an algorithm which will take fewer number of instructions. Or now, if you have a different algorithm, then it, after it is compiled, the instruction mix could be different, and because of different instruction mix, your cycle per instruction could change. Now this is the set of things that change. So if you choose a different algorithm, your instruction count may change, CPI perhaps may change, and then you have programming language. If you use a different programming language, what difference would it make? It is possible that your instruction count may be different if you use a different programming language. Now here, let's not think about Java. The thing with Java is that it kind of introduces another layer. And so let's assume we are doing C or Fortran. So we are not looking at virtual machine. Because basically a virtual machine is adds another layer, so we are not assuming that right now. So programming language could change the instruction count, it could change CPI. And if you use a different compiler, then a different compiler can change the instruction count, and it can change CPI. And then instruction set architecture. If you change instruction set architecture, remember, if you change instruction set architecture, then you are talking about different class of machines. So for example, you are maybe going from MIPS to Pentium or to some other processor, so at the your binary code will not be compatible. So at instruction set architecture, you have your instruction count could be very different. Now it could depend on whether it is RISC oriented or CISC oriented. So if it is a CISC oriented machine, in other words, if it your instruction set architecture is CISC oriented, you will have fewer instructions, but these would be more complex. So you have a six, if you have a CISC processor, then you will have fewer instructions. However, the number of cycles per instruction would be higher. Right? And ISA can also impact clock rate. So depending on the instruction set architecture, you may impact the clock frequency. And then at the lowest level, you have the microarchitecture. And if you change the microarchitecture, now that's how AMD people design their processors. So AMD people will study, or let's say, oh, who are the other people making a compatible processor? AMD is one of them. Xilinx used to make Intel compatible chips. And at one time there was a Transmeta company, you know, the person who came up with the Linux operating system. So he was, but maybe he still is with this company called Transmeta. where one of their products is Intel compatible architecture. So basically what they do is they first take this exactly the same instruction set architecture. Now they cannot steal Intel's design. That of course would be against the law. But they are allowed by law to look at the instructions, so they can copy this. So basically the AMD people will take the specification of instruction set architecture, and then they will come up with their own microarchitecture. So microarchitecture would be different. And if you have a different microarchitecture, then depending on the microarchitecture, your instruction count can be different. What if it's the same instruction set architecture? Actually, instruction set instruction count would be the same. It depends on whether instruction set architecture is same or different. Your CPI definitely could change, and clock rate could change. So we are talking about how you can make the process faster. So make sure you use an efficient algorithm, obviously. Language. Often doesn't make that much difference in performance, provided you have it actually depends, this kind of goes with the compiler. So it depends on how good the compiler is. So if you have a good compiler, then you should get nice, efficient code. And then, of course, you have the instruction set architecture, and then you have microarchitecture, and So you can sometimes take the same instruction set architecture, but have a different microarchitecture. So what you can do, you have do number of things in parallel, and if you do number of things in parallel, your CPI would go down, because you can do more things in the same clock period. Now let's look at a couple of simple examples. Oh, I should mention about technology. Now, a part, we know that processors have become much faster, and we are going to talk about some of the rates at which things have evolved. So processors have become faster primarily because of shrinking geometries. So you have smaller and smaller things on the chip, and as a result things have become faster, and in the past smaller size was the main was a very significant component of making things faster. And now they are kind of approaching the limitation because of various physical considerations, noise and other things. So now they have to start looking at other ways of getting higher performance, and not just technology. But this has been of great help for the past few decades. It will still continue to evolve. And there was a recent report that people have found some way of getting around some technological barrier. But I guess this will continue to be some part of the picture. But people cannot rely on the VLSI technology alone. So in order to get higher performance, you have to do something really significant. Perhaps here, more parallelism, basically do more things at the same time. Let's look at a couple of simple examples. Now the examples are relatively simple, but they will basically kind of tell us what is going on. And so let us say you are working for a processor company, perhaps Intel here in Fort Collins, or maybe AMD here in Fort Collins, or somewhere else. And let us say that in this example, let us assume that there is a certain program that, and maybe it's a popular program, so it kind of it is a representative program. And we want to design a new processor, and we want to sell it. And the existing processor and let me call it the existing processor A. And now let me just throw in some numbers. 600 megahertz. And let's assume that the program takes current CPU execution time is 10 seconds. And let us say that now you want to come up with a better processor. So we have a proposed machine that you have to evaluate, and let's call it machine B. And let's assume it has the same instruction set architecture. So let us say maybe you are working with AMD and you want to compete with Intel. Maybe there's a certain Intel architecture, you want to compete with that. So you want to have the same instruction set architecture, but with a faster clock. And you want to have desired CPU time, let us say, is 8 seconds. So you feel that this 20% gain in speed would be enough for you to sell your product. So, and you are looking at a new instruction set architecture, and the question is, what is the clock frequency you should use? So you have a different microarchitecture. And this architecture requires, so 1.2 it is 1.2 times the CPI. So actually, this microarchitecture is not as good as processor A. However, you are hoping to make it up by using a better clock frequency. So question is, what clock frequency we need? Okay, so let's do a little calculation. So we had said that the CPU time was 10, and 10 is equal to 10 seconds, and that is equal to the number of instructions,
let's call it that INST. And do we know the, we don't know the number of instructions, but we don't need it. Multiplied by CPIA, we don't know CPIA, but it doesn't matter because we have the ratio. And multiplied by the clock period. What is the clock period we have? So clock period is 1 by 600 multiplied by 10 raised to minus, oh, I'm sorry, meg. That's 10 raised to plus 6, right? And now we need to get our second machine and the same number of instructions. This would be the same because they have the same instruction set architecture. So anything compiled for one is supposed to run on the new machine. It has a different CPIB, and we know that CPIB happens to be 1.2 times CPIA, and that is multiplied by, okay, what is the clock? Okay, that's what we have need to find out, by clock frequency. And so let's assume this is F. So we need to solve this equation for F. Okay, so what is F? So basically we have here, we see that F equal to, or why don't we do it this way, 8 is equal to INS multiplied by CPIA multiplied by 1.2 multiplied by 1 by F. And I can substitute this, so 8 equal to, okay, what is INST multiplied by CPIA? That is equal to 10 multiplied by 600. I hope I'm doing this correctly. So I have substituted this from there. So F, which we need to determine, is equal to 8. And solving it, now you will notice that this is going to be 10 by 8 multiplied by 1.2 multiplied by 600 multiplied by 10 raised to 6. So this part is the same, and this is the part where which is different. So that comes out to be 900 megahertz. So basically your new clock frequency has to be high enough to finish the program in shorter time, and it has to be high enough to take into account the fact that your CPI is higher. Now lower CPI is good. Lower CPI is faster, right? Higher CPI is slower. Questions on this? So if you want to have a competing machine that will run 20% faster, in spite of a less efficient microarchitecture, you need to use a significantly higher clock frequency. Now these days actually the process is actually usually the opposite. So typically these days, because we are getting to the limitation of frequency, so if you want to have a higher performance machine, what you need to do
is to come up with a machine with what? So what do you want improved? Assuming you can't do much about frequency. Actually you can, but the progress I guess would be slower. So you need better CPI, right? So you need to be able to do more. You need to be able to do the same thing using fewer clock cycles. So do more things at the same time. More parallelism. Questions or comments on this? Now this is one trade-off. Now another thing, we want to take a look at trade-off using the compiler and we have some time. Let's consider another example. Now let's say you are in a compiler writing business. How many of you are planning to be a compiler writer? Okay, how many of you think that you might be a compiler writer? Anyone? Nobody wants to be a compiler writer? Okay, some of you might be. Okay, I see that there are a few of you are ready to write compilers. Now that is hardcore software development. So if you want to write a compiler, now when you optimize a compiler, what should you optimize? What should you minimize?
Number of instructions.
That is appropriate. You want fewer instructions. But is there something else you may want to do in an optimal compiler? Yes, sometimes a compiler can support parallelism, but let's not consider that. But yeah, that's another thing that a compiler can do. Remember, you want fewer instructions, but also you want, remember, some instructions take less time, some instructions take more time. So what you want to do is to try to use more of the instructions that take less time, right? So that way your compiler will be faster. Okay. I guess I probably shouldn't rush through this. The example is not too big, but let's not, rush through this example. So basically, we are going to see an example where a compiler writer has some choices. So there is some program sec. He has a choices of code sequences, and there are some sequences that may require more instructions, some with less. However, he also knows that some instructions take fewer clock cycles. So how is the compiler writer going to come up with optimal implementation for that particular piece of code? So we'll see a little example next time. And also we want to see something about the trends. In computer architecture and computer performance, that is something very dynamic. You look back after a year, and what you expect today would be what a year from now you will probably be expecting a lot better things. You probably want to get a higher performance machine and want to pay less for it. So trends are very important in this. So we will take a look at some of the trends related to time, how things have been progressing, and what can we expect. So we'll also do that next time. And remember, we will have a quiz should be available to you this afternoon. And I think we have set it for, did we set it for 5 o'clock? Or
yes.
Yeah, I think we have set it for 5 o'clock.
So would be available, and you have to allow some time for it. Some of the questions may take some time. And I think we have set it to Monday, 11 o'clock or so. So keep that in mind. And we will have the test on Thursday.